assistance of the 2020 Trump campaign staffer Carter Page. This comes a week before the DOJ Inspector General report is due out. They allegedly listened to his phone calls to get a window into what was going on with the campaign, and Page tells Fox Business Network it's even worse than that.
Not only was I never charged with anything, I've never been asked any question by any of the federal investigators, either DOJ or FBI, that even made any sense or, you know, hinted at any criminality whatsoever. So it's not even just clear and convincing evidence. It's just there's no evidence whatsoever because I never did anything wrong.
According to the American Farm Bureau, your Thanksgiving dinner will cost just under $49 to feed a family of 10. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
President Trump sounds off on the whistleblower who sparked impeachment proceedings. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has more from Washington.
During a White House event on Friday morning, President Trump was asked by reporters about the week's public impeachment hearings in the U.S. House. At the root of the impeachment inquiry was his phone call with the Ukraine leader back in July that a whistleblower claimed should have been of concern. Asked if he would try to fire the still anonymous whistleblower, the president says,
I consider it to be a fake whistleblower. Because what he wrote didn't correspond to what I said in any way, shape, or form.
The president was remarking during the event, which was supposed to be honoring nearly two dozen championship collegiate teams.
It's been 56 years today since the assassination of then-President John F. Kennedy. Kennedy was shot and killed on November 22, 1963, while riding in an open car in Dallas, Texas. This is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
As families get ready to spend time together over the holidays, this can be an interesting time to talk to that uncle who you haven't seen all year about the politics of the day, especially if you guys disagree, or maybe it's that football game. Maybe you're not a fan of the Cowboys and he is. Maybe you're a fan of Michigan and he likes Ohio State. Well, I had a chance to catch up with Buster Benson. He's author of a new book titled Why Are We Yelling? The Art of the Productive Disagreement. And I asked him a few tips for what we can do to handle that relative or family member who we might not always get along with.
Yeah, I think the first thing that's really important to think about is reframing everything of the disagreement in terms of evidence and facts and proof. And, you know, family is great because we already understand people as really rich, complex people. And we're all filled with really fascinating stories about the past and, you know, what built our character. So focus on that. Focus on, instead of like, let's prove things together, let's focus on the stories that led to us having the beliefs that we have, that led us to thinking the things that we do. Why do we think that, you know, things are important to us? Who do we admire that exemplifies the things that are important to us? And start at that more human level. Especially great for family members because there is just so much shared history there to relate about.
For more news, remember you can always take us with you on the go anywhere you are by downloading the iHeartRadio app and searching for USA Radio News. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Reportedly under
the news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
A former FBI employee reportedly under criminal investigation is accused of altering documents tied to the surveillance of the 2020 Trump campaign staffer Carter Page. This comes a week before the DOJ Inspector General report is due out. They allegedly listened to his phone calls to get a window into what was going on with the campaign, and Page tells Fox Business Network it's even worse than that.
Not only was I never charged with anything, I've never been asked any question by any of the federal investigators, either DOJ or FBI, that even made any sense or, you know, hinted at any criminality whatsoever. So it's not even just clear and convincing evidence. It's just there's no evidence whatsoever because I never did anything wrong.
According to the American Farm Bureau, your Thanksgiving dinner will cost just under $49 to feed a family of 10. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
President Trump sounds off on the whistleblower who sparked impeachment proceedings. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has more from Washington.
During a White House event on Friday morning, President Trump was asked by reporters about the week's public impeachment hearings in the U.S. House. At the root of the impeachment inquiry was his phone call with the Ukraine leader back in July that a whistleblower claimed should have been of concern. Asked if he would try to fire the still anonymous whistleblower, the president says,
I consider it to be a fake whistleblower. Because what he wrote didn't correspond to what I said in any way, shape, or form.
The president was remarking during the event, which was supposed to be honoring nearly two dozen championship collegiate teams.
It's been 56 years today since the assassination of then-President John F. Kennedy. Kennedy was shot and killed on November 22, 1963, while riding in an open car in Dallas, Texas. This is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
As families get ready to spend time together over the holidays, this can be an interesting time to talk to that uncle who you haven't seen all year about the politics of the day, especially if you guys disagree, or maybe it's that football game. Maybe you're not a fan of the Cowboys and he is. Maybe you're a fan of Michigan and he likes Ohio State. Well, I had a chance to catch up with Buster Benson. He's author of a new book titled Why Are We Yelling? The Art of the Productive Disagreement. And I asked him a few tips for what we can do to handle that relative or family member who we might not always get along with.
Yeah, I think the first thing that's really important to think about is reframing everything of the disagreement in terms of evidence and facts and proof. And, you know, family is great because we already understand people as really rich, complex people. And we're all filled with really fascinating stories about the past and, you know, what built our character. So focus on that. Focus on, instead of like, let's prove things together, let's focus on the stories that led to us having the beliefs that we have, that led us to thinking the things that we do. Why do we think that, you know, things are important to us? Who do we admire that exemplifies the things that are important to us? And start at that more human level. Especially great for family members because there is just so much shared history there to relate about.
For more news, remember you can always take us with you on the go anywhere you are by downloading the iHeartRadio app and searching for USA Radio News. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunter and Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families.
Well, good afternoon. Sorry, the traffic was horrible today, and so I played the news a little bit later than I expected to. And I'm Pat Smits, and here with the program It's the Law. First of all, I'd like to tell you about the weather. Now, coming down from northern Hunterdon County, it was cloudy, dark clouds. Frankly, looked like the only reason we weren't getting snow is that it was 48 degrees. And, in fact, it has been about 48 degrees today. And what the weather prediction tonight is, mostly clear. Now, that will mean that some of these clouds that I was seeing earlier are not going to dump the snow because they could, because we expect a low of about 27 degrees tonight. Tomorrow, beautiful day, a little cool, but of course at this time of year we expect it. Sunny and 46 degrees, so that will be very nice if you're in a sunny area. Certainly the day to go out and do any kind of work you have to do outside or any kind of shopping outside of the house, because on Saturday night, there's a 90% chance of rain unless it gets colder than predicted. The low is now predicted about 36 degrees. So if we get down around 32, we're going to have snow. By Sunday, there's an 80% chance of rain initially. So I guess we should say rain. And then a chance of rain goes down to about 40%. High of about 45 degrees. By Sunday night, it should be mostly clear. And then on Monday, sunny, mostly sunny, high of about 50 degrees. So that Saturday and Monday should be the best days in the next 3 days. By Monday night, partly cloudy. So, program, it's the law. And just wanted to give you some information. And I want to thank, once again, Cal Barson. He's with the Barson Group in Somerville. They're accountants and forensic accountants. And Cal always comes up with the best tips. And this tip today, I think, is important. And at least people should keep this, maybe keep this on, you know, a Rolodex if you're old enough to have a Rolodex or on your phone. And the question is, have you ever thought that maybe there is an unclaimed bank or investment account or some other kind of valuable liquid asset in your name just waiting for you to stumble across it? Yeah, sure. Well, most of us, it's not going to happen. However, if that would be the case, the National Association of Unclaimed Property Administrators, they deal with just this type of situation. And actually could be waiting to hear from you. In fact, there are a few potential avenues for finding out if there are any such unclaimed assets in your name. This can be a bank account, insurance payments, life insurance policy, annuities, etc. And so what you should do is try searching by reaching out to, and this is the where you go online, missingmoney.com or unclaimed.org. Those are two sites. And who knows, maybe you'll find out that you have a story worth a TV reality show script. I guess that's not saying much. But in any event, they're the two sites that Cal recommends to look for any possibility of missing money, and perhaps not even just for you, but for an elderly relative or a relative who may have died. I know that certainly a few years ago there were a lot of elderly people, especially in Florida, who, because of high rates of interest, would put small amounts of money in various CDs at various banks, and sometimes it wasn't easy to find them. So that's my tip for today, and then let's talk about what's happening with respect to the law. Sorry, I'm having some trouble holding up this mic. It doesn't seem to attach the way it should. But let's talk about what has been happening as far as in the law, things that are maybe of interest to you. Well, it's been, you know, why the New Jersey courts could see a wave of sex abuse cases against the Boy Scouts. You know, it's Catholic priests, it's the Boy Scouts. It's truly unfortunate. But it's been less than a year since the Boy Scouts of America announced it was considering filing for bankruptcy to deal with the number of sex abuse claims, and that in that time, 40 states have introduced bills aiming to expand the statute of limitations for bringing such lawsuits alleging this type of abuse. So that is pretty significant. But what is the other thing I did want to say today before I even started the program is for those of you who are probably 60 years old or older, you have to remember this day, because most of us, even if we were young children, remember what happened in Dallas in 1963. Believe it or not, that was 56 years ago, and it was when President Kennedy was assassinated. And certainly he had such an impact on younger people in this country. He really did. I suppose there might have been some ultra conservative teens who were not supportive of Kennedy, but for most people, this was Camelot. It was certainly a new era. We really were not aware of what was happening, or most of us were not aware of what was happening in Vietnam at the time. And although we held Kennedy in high esteem for his war record, he was still someone from that generation. And I think it took longer for most people to understand what was happening in Vietnam. And we had to have so many of our young men killed before there were real protests that started. So within a few years after his death, of course, that's when the major protests. And if you were a teenager back then and didn't remember what happened in 1963 or 1968 and the Democratic Convention in Chicago, I guess I would say shame on you. But read that for the kids today and even the young adults today. Remember, that's history. So we look back. For those of us who remember the day, it's one of those days that, you know, like 9/11, we really remember where we were when we heard the news. So, what else is happening? I guess I meant to talk to you about this before I meant to talk to you about the Boy Scouts of America and their concern about a wave of sex abuse cases now that many states have introduced bills to expand the statute of limitations. There is also a $40 million libel verdict awarded to a hedge fund and its principals, and that will remain standing after the New Jersey Supreme Court declined to take up an appeal in the case. So, again, that $40 million verdict is going to stand. Pretty significant. Well, there is, unfortunately, a Superior Court judge may be removed from the bench for allegedly harboring her fugitive boyfriend. And she was being represented by a high-profile defense lawyer, Ray Brown. Now she's going to be representing herself. Most of what was happening in the last week or more have been unreported cases. So that, they're not used, they cannot be used as precedent. Some of them, however, are extremely important, especially if you have a case that has to deal with the same issue. And it's worthwhile, and certainly most of us as attorneys read these cases that are in our area of practice, even if they're not published, because it can be very helpful in making an argument in a case, although you can't cite the prior case's precedent. And that's true even if it's an appellate-level case and you're making the argument in front of a trial judge. The trial judge does not have to consider any cases that may be relevant if, in fact, they're not published. On the other hand, the judges also read these cases. So the... Sorry, I'm really having trouble with this mic, trying to get it to stay in place. So if you hear something, that's me. I keep figuring there's got to be something that will tighten it, and I'm not finding it. Sorry about that. So there was a family law case that, although it was not published, it has some interest. It has its initials, DAWV versus WGW, and the defendant appealed from post-judgment orders in a matrimonial case, and that means that there were orders after the judgment of divorce. And in any event, the defendant was required to remove personal property from the former marital residence. And he then filed, after that, he filed an appeal, which he has a right to, with the appellate division. And in that case, the property settlement agreement provided that the defendant would retain ownership and possession of 6 vehicles and remove them from the marital residence within 30 days after the party signed the agreement, and that he would inventory and remove other personal property. So he failed to do so. His former wife moved to enforce litigants' rights, and that's what happens in a situation in family law if someone does not comply with an agreement that's incorporated into a judgment of divorce. The other person can file a post-judgment motion to enforce the prior order or agreement. And in this case, that's what she did. The trial court ordered the defendant to perform the inventory and remove his personal property. He again failed to comply, and the trial court ordered that his former wife could dispose of the property. At that point, the defendant's former husband moved for reconsideration, relying upon an uncertified physician's letter that he should stay off his feet. So that was an insufficient, the court found that was insufficient, the trial court did. So the court found that he had the ability to comply but failed to do so and ordered him to turn over the titles of the 6 vehicles. Once again, he did not comply, and the trial court appointed the plaintiff as attorney in fact so she could obtain duplicate titles. Then the defendant argued, defendant former husband argued the trial court abused its discretion by ordering the forfeiture of his property as a sanction for not timely removing it. And the appellate division found no abuse of discretion by the trial court. And it's because the trial judge's findings and conclusions were fully supported by the record. So very important. What this shows is comply with agreements or get an extension, either voluntarily or go to court and ask the court for an extension based on the reasons that you need. And so that is very important, and it just confirms that, you know, you can't just ignore court orders. And frankly, some people think they can, and they do because they get away with it for a long time. And the problem in these cases is very often the judges, you know, they don't grant legal fees, and it's expensive to have to go back. Excuse me. Excuse me, to go back to court to enforce court orders. And in this case, the judge did what the judge should have done, based on all of the information that was provided to the judge. Now, it could well have been different. The decision may well have been different and probably would have if, in fact, he had a certification from a physician that there was a good basis for him not to comply within that time period. So let's play a few spots from our sponsors, and then we'll be back.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 in Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908 284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hello again. I'm back. It's the law. I'm talking. I'm Pat Smits, and although I practice in Hunterdon County and, frankly, throughout the state, my practice is limited to family law matters and generally some guardianship things, but not general practice of law. And I'd like to at least, inform you of some of the other things that are going on and certainly the cases and how cases are being decided. And there's an insurance law case, motor vehicle torts, something I would never do. Know some good attorneys who handle these cases. But this was Nesby versus Flermond. And again, it was an appellate case, and in fact, it was approved for publication. And this is meaning that this could be used for precedent if someone has a similar case. And in this case, the plaintiff appealed from orders granting summary judgment to the defendants. And what happened in this case is the plaintiff was injured in an automobile accident in which his vehicle was rear-ended by the defendant. And the defendant, however, neither owned the vehicle she was driving nor had her own automobile policy. So that's significant. Instead, defendants had issued policies to her mother, meaning that she wasn't the only defendant, but the defendant insurance company had issued policies to the driver's mother and sister, and she resided with them. And so what happened here is the plaintiff exhausted his PIP coverage, and the insurer of the owner of the vehicle driven by this woman tendered the plaintiff the full policy limit in exchange for a release for the defendant and the vehicle's owner. So the plaintiff's attorney notified the defendants of the offer, and plaintiff alleged that neither insurer objected to the settlement. However, defendants later denied coverage to the plaintiff. The trial court ultimately granted defendant's motion for summary judgment, ruling that the plaintiff had settled his claims with the at-fault driver and with the vehicle's owner, and that the plaintiff had no relationship with the defendants, meaning the other defendants, the insurance company, that would entitle him to coverage. The trial court further ruled in another case, Longworth versus Van Houten, was inapplicable to the present case because the plaintiff was not seeking underinsured motorist coverage from his own insurer. On appeal, the appellate division affirmed and granted summary judgment to the defendants. The court noted that the plaintiff was not entitled to PIP coverage from the defendants because he was not an insured under their policies. So very important. The only PIP coverage he was entitled to was under his own insurance policies. And by the way, insurance policies and insurance in New Jersey is, extremely difficult to understand. That's why, honestly, it's very important to talk to an attorney to make sure that what you think you're going to be covered for if you're injured in an accident actually is going to happen. So in this case, the plaintiff was not entitled to PIP coverage from the insurance company, the defendant's insurance company, because he was not an insured under their policies. So that was very significant. And the court further held that an insured could not recover PIP benefits from an uninsured fellow resident of the insured's household. I know this gets a little convoluted, but in other words, this young woman was not insured, and the fact that she resided in the same household as the person holding the insurance doesn't entitle her, doesn't entitle the person, even if she's at fault, doesn't entitle him to cover under her mother's or her sister's insurance. Finally, the court noted that the plaintiff had settled his claims against the driver and therefore could not litigate those settled claims against the defendant's insurance company. So, you know, now whether or not the plaintiff did this or whether or not the attorney he had didn't understand, he lost. Plain and simple, whatever he settled for, that's what he was getting. So the fact that he did not waive his rights to file against the insurance company really didn't make any difference. So the what we also need to remember is that New Jersey this summer enacted a wage act that increases the potential liabilities for businesses in the state. So just keep that in mind. Make sure that you're paying the minimum wage, etc. There's legislation pending that would establish certain consumer protections related to arbitration organizations. And that has cleared from the Senate Commerce Committee by a 3-2 vote. So we don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, that's the situation. At least it's cleared. And whether that gets enacted into law and signed by the governor, you know, not sure. We'll not know that yet. There was a criminal law case that was approved for publication, and that's in the matter of Registrant AA. And again, that was the appellate division, and the registrant, meaning AA, appealed from the denial of his motion to terminate an order requiring, I guess I should say him or her, that's not defined, to register in New Jersey as a sex offender. I guess we can assume it's a him, since it's very rare that a woman has to register as a sex offender. But in any event, it is a man because he appealed the denial of his motion. So he had been convicted in New York of disseminating indecent material to a minor. Although his offense in New York did not require sex offender registration, the pre-sentence investigation report recommended probation. And then New York requested the transfer of his probation supervision to New Jersey. And in this case, then, the probation officer in New Jersey provided an assistant prosecutor with documentation of his New York conviction and requested a determination as to whether or not he was required to register in New Jersey under Megan's Law. And, of course, Megan's Law is the law that was enacted after Megan Kayanka was sexually abused and murdered. And the law was named after her, after the legislature enacted it. So that the probation department needed to know whether or not this man had to register in New Jersey under Megan's Law. And that, because New Jersey was going to accept supervision of him. And the assistant prosecutor concluded that the registrant's New York conviction was similar to New Jersey's statute, which is called luring, L-U-R-I-N-G, in case you can't understand my pronunciation of the term. So it's a luring statute where someone is charged with trying to lure, and usually it's a child, lure a child into a car, for example. And that is included in New Jersey under the Megan's Law registration requirement. So In this case, he was provided with notice of his obligation to register, and 9 years later, he moved to terminate ab initio, meaning from the beginning. So not 9 years he waited his registration requirement. And the trial court denied his motion. On appeal, the appellate court affirmed the denial of his motion to terminate. And the appellate division first ruled that the first of all, as I said, on appeal, the appellate division affirmed the denial of his motion to terminate. And the appellate division first ruled that he was entitled to procedural due process during the analysis of whether his New York conviction was similar to a New Jersey offense that would require sex offender registration. The appellate division held that the registrant was entitled to notice of the determination that he was required to register under Megan's Law, and that the opportunity to challenge and to have an opportunity to challenge that determination in the trial court. However, the appellate division noted that the trial court could consider the underlying facts of the out-of-state offense in determining whether it was similar to Megan's Law violation. And in this case, the appellate division held that the registrant was therefore afforded appropriate procedural due process. So that is, the question was, did he have procedural due process? And the court said, yes, that he had been afforded procedural due process. And therefore, the appellate division affirmed the trial court's findings, which concluded that both the New York and New Jersey statutes criminalized exhibiting explicit materials to a child for sexual gratification. And that was the real issue here was that whatever he was convicted of in New York, did we have a similar statute which would require him to register in New Jersey? So if it had nothing to do with what he was convicted of in New York, it would not not be something that he'd have to register. And the other thing that this shows is that litigants are entitled to due process. And we always need to make sure that they have the prior, that the other party has a prior notice, etc. And this can be difficult. It really can be difficult, especially in international cases. That's where I found it be very difficult when we're dealing in an international case and trying to serve someone in another country. Believe me, that can be extremely difficult depending on the country and their procedures under the Hague Convention. But that's beyond where we need to get on this. So let me play a few more spots, and then we'll come back and talk about some of the other news.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
100 Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. 100 Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call 100 Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.100andhealthcare.org.
Well, I'm back, and I have a case that I want to talk about. This was approved for publication, and it has to do with a decision dismissing a petitioner's claim that her employment with the school district was terminated in violation of her tenure rights and that her termination was void because it occurred without proper delegation of the superintendent's authority. So what happened here is petitioner was initially hired as a senior clerk before being transferred to secretarial assistant. The district later reclassified her position to the unclassified title of confidential assistant, which was not governed by the Civil Service Act and therefore constituted a resignation from her civil service title. She was advised that she could request consideration for reemployment in her prior civil service title within 3 years of her resignation. She did not appeal her transfer. However, more than 2 years later, the district chief talent officer terminated her employment. She appealed, arguing that she was entitled to return to her classified position. This was denied. Her appeal was denied by the Commissioner of Education, ruling that the petitioner had acquiesced to her transfer to an unclassified position and therefore had no right to challenge her termination from an unclassified position. So the Commissioner of Education affirmed this, rejecting the petitioner's argument that she had tenure in her position as a confidential assistant because she only started accruing tenure rights upon her transfer to that position. So the commissioner adopted the administrative law judge's finding that the superintendent had delegated her authority to terminate the petitioner's employment to the district chief talent officer. On appeal, the appellate division reversed the commissioner's decision. The appellate division held that the commissioner erroneously calculated the petitioner's tenure under statutory provisions applicable only to teaching staff. So in this case, since she was not teaching staff, it was not proper to use provisions that were applicable only to teaching staff. The appellate division further ruled that the time spent in classified civil service titles was not exempt from tenure. So accordingly, the court ruled that the commissioner had violated the petitioner's tenure rights and In this case, the Supreme Court adopted the opinion of the Superior Court and did not hear this. They just adopted the appellate division decision in that case. So everybody needs to be careful about what they do. It had nothing to do with whether or not she was handling her job appropriately. It had to do with the fact that people do have rights and that organizations, educational organizations, need to follow the correct procedure. So that's really what this was, is a procedural issue. Now, the apparently the legislative or the legislation tactics employed by a frequent flyer of copyright infringement suits faced heavy criticism in a new ruling by a federal judge in New Jersey. So this is obviously when they call a frequent flyer someone who files litigation constantly, or pretty consistently at least. There was an arbitration case, but actually there are more than one arbitration case, but they were not approved for publication, which usually means, well, frankly, I don't know what it means, because very often I think there are cases that would be very helpful, and they should be published so they could be used. Now, the Merck can't get back $2.5 billion Hep C, hepatitis C, patent award. So this was the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit will not revive a $2.5 billion, did I say million, I meant billion dollar, jury award that Merck and Company and a subsidiary won against Gilead Sciences. So, don't know anything more about that, but obviously Merck can't be happy with that type of, billion-dollar award. Now, there are also Johnson & Johnson accused a judge and said he showed pro-plaintiff bias when he posed for photos and allegedly high-fived the jurors after the pharmaceutical giant was hit with an $8 billion award. So, you know, I don't even want to comment on that, but obviously it was very foolish for the judge to do that. There was another case about a registrant, a sex offender registrant, and so that in this case, there were registrants who contended that the trial court was attempting to maintain personal jurisdiction over them through the possible application of unspecified laws of another jurisdiction, and that the language posed the risk of confusing courts and officers in other jurisdictions. And in this case, the appellate division agreed with the registrants that the language was unnecessary and improper and reversed the inclusion of the language in the trial court's orders. Specifically in this case, the court noted that the language suggesting registrants could have sex offender registration obligations in other jurisdictions could not be perceived as a reservation by the trial court in the court's determination that registrants were not likely to commit another sexual offense, nor were they likely to pose a risk to safety of others. That's important, by the way. That's very, very significantly, because in this case, the registrants were both convicted sex offenders, and they moved for relief from their community supervision. That's what that was about. And the trial court entered orders relieving both registrants of their obligations. However, in each case, included language in the order stating that any obligations the registrants had in any other jurisdiction as a result of their convicted sex offender status remained within the purview of the laws. So, I mean, just it was the language. The judge just overstepped what should have been put in as far as language. There was a non-published case where the defendant in Calbazana versus Calbazana, appellate division, of course, so there was an appeal. And he, meaning the father, appealed from his denial of a motion for reconsideration of an order compelling him to contribute to the college costs of the party's son. He further appealed from an order granting his former wife's cross motion for counsel fees incurred in defending against the motion for reconsideration. In this case, the judgment of divorce incorporated the terms of the party's property settlement agreement. And in the property settlement agreement, the parties agreed to renegotiate the responsibility for their son's college costs. And if they could not agree on a split, they would refer the matter to the courts for determination. So, however, the parties agreed that their share of the college costs would not be calculated after using all available scholarships, grants, and loans. Moreover, the party's son would be entitled to select a college with the agreement at the parties, with the agreement of the parties. In other words, the son could decide on the college after giving consideration of each party's ability to pay the costs. And each party's financial responsibility would terminate upon their son's future college graduation. Now, following the hearing, a trial court ordered the defendant to pay half of his son's past college expenses and 68% of the future college expenses. And thereafter, the trial court denied his motion for reconsideration and granted the plaintiff's cross motion for a counsel fee award, ruling that the defendant's motion for reconsideration was not in good faith. So that's why he said it was not in good faith, as it was merely a rehash of his arguments raised during the original hearing. So then on appeal, as would be expected, the court affirmed the denial of the defendant's reconsideration motion, noting that the property settlement agreement contemplated that the court would intervene and make a determination. And the court held that there was no requirement for a personal relationship for the defendant's child to make a request for assistance with college. And finally, the court affirmed the award of the plaintiff's counsel fees, concluding that the trial court, that the defendant's motion for reconsideration was not reasonable or in good faith. So all of that is important. And right now I'm going to say this is the end, and it is the end of the show. I will play a few spots. I'll play the news and give you the weather, and then we'll go on and talk about sports. some good games coming up on Thanksgiving. Of course, we have a weekend before Thanksgiving. And then we'll have not only games this next week. Of course, we do have a game on Thursdays anyway. But now we'll have a games on Thanksgiving. So anyone who wants to can spend the whole day watching games. And I sometimes think that we have to squeeze dinner in during the halftime, which is a pretty fast dinner at our house. So we'll be back after the news and spots.